Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, audience, to the One Cell, One Light radio show with your host, Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, commonly known as Dr. Hildy. And today, my special guest is Ms. Rosalind Peterson. We were scheduled to have our show last week, which is going to be on this special topic of Levaquin, Cipro, and more. And you've got to read the fine print of the little inserts or the 65-page insert that might be in the medical pharmaceutical box that you'd get from your local drugstore. But we had some technical difficulties last week, and we could not air our show, and we're very happy to be with you today. And let me reintroduce Ms. Rosalind Peterson. Thank you for being with us again, Rosalind.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to be here as a guest on your show today.
And, you know, I, as you know, I love art history, and you do too, and we've come in the environmental agricultural fields over our professional career, and but I will say, for what our topic is today and how we're going to share the information with you, audience, I know you will appreciate it, and especially the hard work that Ms. Peterson has done on this and our staff, but the thing is, on this particular show, there is a lot of articles that we have attached, even some PowerPoints that are relative to the types of chemical composition of these products, because you will need those in the future, I feel, to learn more about what you might be prescribed and also inform your physician and healthcare provider, because this effect, what we're going to discuss, is ironically, the Achilles tendon, the muscles that are involved in the backs of your legs and how they affect. I mean, Achilles, the most famous warrior and greatest fighter that there ever was, and demigod, must be hearing our voices to tell about this tale. Wouldn't you think so, Rosalind?
Oh, I would think so.
I tell you, it's just even eerie on what happens with it. Can you share with the audience how you got involved with this, or what brought this all to your attention recently, Rosalind?
Well, I've been taking care of a friend of my mother's since July, who had some heart trouble, and she's 92 years of age. And at this point in time, she had a vaginal infection and was hospitalized for the infection in late August. And what took place is that the hospital, unbeknownst to me, her family, or without notification of anyone, decided to prescribe a drug for her to solve this problem with this vaginal infection. And the drug of choice that they chose, not notifying anyone, was a drug called Levaquin. And they administered this drug to her for several days while she was in the hospital. And when she got out of the hospital, she had to continue taking three pills left in the prescription. So I went across to the pharmacy when she was just getting out of the hospital, and to take her back home. And what happened was I had to pick up this prescription, and in picking up the prescription, there's an attachment and things in this attachment which talks about warnings, side effect warnings. At the time, I was kind of in a rush, so I picked it up. The pharmacist said, don't take with certain other drugs. I said, okay. He looked at what she was taking and said he didn't think it was a problem right now. And so I picked it up. I put it in the in my purse, and I took Catherine Fred home. And what happened was is that within 3 days, when she stopped taking this medication, all of a sudden she had the weirdest side effects I've ever seen in my life. And she had never experienced any of this in her life. All of a sudden, she didn't know who I was. She was having hallucinations and dreams and people playing on the ceiling of her room and was unable to connect with anyone or anything. She was in this state of hallucination. She couldn't walk. She couldn't eat. If she tried to do anything, it was like she was not within her body, essentially. And that I realized that there was something terribly wrong. I took a look at the side effects very closely, and one of the cues in the list, 6 pages of side effects that I originally had, was that the side effects could show up weeks, months, and days later, and included, as I later discovered, 17 of her side effects. Now, we're talking about inability to walk. We're talking about coughing. We're talking about unusual tiredness. We're talking about she was thirsty, dizziness, lightheaded. We're talking about all these things that were talked about as part of this information leaflet. And it also talked about confusion, nervousness, hallucinations, depression, all these mood changes, almost a form of dementia. She had never experienced this before, anything like it, not even close. And here we were.
3 days into the, excuse me for interrupting, I just want the audience to realize that this is 3 days in after taking the initial dose or whatever is recommended,
well,
and then she started to have these. Is that correct?
Yeah, she had finished taking the pill, and 3 days later, she started having all of these effects. And when she was trying to eat, she couldn't keep her fork straight to keep the food on the form. She had a personality change, and she was eating food with her hands because that was the only way she could eat. This is impossible because this woman is very intelligent, very bright, never had any of these type of problems before. So I rushed her off to the hospital, and I told her that she was probably having a drug reaction to Levaquin, and that she needed to be detoxed from this according to the instructions that I had been reading. And, of course, the hospital, having prescribed the drug, goes into total denial and says, oh, no, we prescribe this all the time. There's never been any problem. And I'm irate, and I said, well, I said, she is having these symptoms now, and I suggest that you take a look at her and, in other words, get busy on, you know, helping her with these side effects from this drug. The hospital, of course, would have no admission because they were scared out of their wits for a lawsuit immediately upon my returning to the hospital and mentioning Levaquin symptoms. I also found out in a brief note from the pharmacy that this drug was supposed to be given to people who had who were exposed to anthrax, and that there was a U.S. Food and Drug Administration notice at the bottom of this, just a little note. And I thought to myself, I'm going to go home on my computer, and I'm going to figure out what's going on. And the first thing that comes up was 65 pages of Levaquin side effects that this drug that they had given this 92-year-old woman not only was not recommended for people over 62 years of age, but had about 62 pages of side effects and problems and associations, and that this drug was a bioterrorism drug to be given in case of biological warfare or exposure
right.
to certain
and,
types of things.
And in that, when Levaquin came at the same time or after the Cipro, And Cipro was the drug of choice for anthrax when we had all those anthrax outbreaks in Congress and stuff like that. They would use that.
That's correct. And they're all the same type of drug. They're a fluoral quinolone.
Yeah, that hard name I'm having a hard time saying, and that means very important, audience. Go ahead, Rosalind. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I wanted to make sure that point was brought out.
Yes, and it's marketed for people with pneumonia. It's marketed for people with any type of infections. It's marketed for people who have sinusitis. It's marketed to people who have any type of bacterial function, and all of these drugs are now being widely prescribed, even when there's other drugs that wouldn't be as harmful or have these type of side effects. So they're marketed under Cipro, Levaquin, Cipro XR, Proquin XR, Factiv, Avalox, Naroxen, and Floxin are just a few of them. And those are the drugs that are part of this fluoroquinolone bioterrorism drug associated with the U.S. FDA report, which spells out very clearly all of the problems. I soon discovered that there were problems with tendinitis. I soon began to discover that you're not supposed to use it with an IV when you're in the hospital. I soon discovered that you're...
Can I interrupt you? We've had this discussion, meaning, and it's probably why they don't recommend the IV, because that's usually saline,
right,
a salt solution. And this particular family of medication, those
fluoroquinolones,
okay, they... go like an electrical to the sodium channel of the nerve and interact. And probably what happens is that gets that imbalance of the nerve channel and causes swelling and then possible the rupture thereafter.
That's absolutely correct. And there's hundreds and hundreds of lawsuits against Levaquin and these other drugs online that people can look up. But what was also worrisome about this drug, and with my friend Catherine, is that she was hospitalized more during the month of July than she was out of the hospital, and each time she went in, it was with the side effects, the intensity of the side effects from the Levaquin increasing each time. And whenever it occurred, the hospital liked to take the position, well, it's out of her system, she, you know, it's no longer a problem. And I said, but she's experiencing something along the nature of all of these side effects, because nothing else could explain why she would have all of these side effects and hallucinations, dementia symptoms, all of this. I did learn that the symptoms can show up weeks and months after taking this medication, sometimes years. I also learned that it has nothing to do with the toxicity. In other words, where people say, well, it gets out of your system and then you wouldn't have symptoms.
Right, that bioavailability, it can be out of the system, but I'm going to let you finish and then I'm going to share what my thoughts on that,
okay,
why it's in the body.
It's in the body. It the symptoms that show up also can be, you know, for example, months later or weeks later in her case, and also the fact that once you've taken this drug, you may not associate the taking of this drug months before as the cause of the symptoms that you're now experiencing. And also that no one is following through with the proper blood tests. No one is following through to see if you're doing okay. There's no checking. So if you go into the hospital months later with any of these side effects, the likelihood that someone's going to go back and remember that you or that you took these drugs, like Levaquin, is probably slim and none, because, one, the people that gave it to you aren't going to want to talk about it because they're afraid of a lawsuit, and two, if the doctor now treating you doesn't know that you were given this drug at some point in your past history, he's not going to be looking for those side effects.
Right. And this compound reacts when it goes in, audience, into the body, into the cells, because it is an antibiotic, is trying to kill these very unique pathogens. It binds to the DNA, the enzymes, and the fluoroquinolone binds together. And why that particular compound is active to go after the DNA and can mutate it or can inhibit certain enzymes is because the DNA molecule is circular in nature and it's covalently bonded. In other words, positive, negative charged, and it's closed. But when it gets the medication, it opens it up and it can cause two main enzymes of the DNA not to work. And one is gryase. And when gryase is not working or turned off, it causes the inhibition of the binding units of the ATP, which is our energy molecule within our mitochondria. In other words, you will have super fatigue, and at the same time, this compound, which is the quinolone antimicrobial agents in that family, they will coat like the DNA. In other words, you may have an anti-nuclear antibody test that is on the membrane of the nucleus and it's positive, but then they do double-stranded DNA tests, meaning is there anything attached to your double strand? And it might be normal is supposed to be like less than one or that, and you might have a 4 or you might have a 7. So chemicals can attach to it or a foreign material, and that's what occurs on this. But just in those two tests, not many physicians would even order it or even know how to look for the quinolone analytical, because you would have to go to the parent chemical to find it, like on National Medical Service Lab or any of these other labs that do specialty toxicology testing for the bigger labs that are in the U.S. The thing is that what I find very interesting is this chemical breaks down into phenothiourease and all of this type nature, which is exactly what Annie Choi and I did in that study with who can taste phenothiourea or phenothiocarbamates. And it may be that ones that are tasters are more susceptible to the toxic effects of this compound than non-tasters because they've been poisoned before.
Really? That's interesting. Yeah,
I find it very interesting that some people can taste and some people can't, but the majority of these compounds, the audience and Rosalyn, this same compound, this family, meaning when it goes into the mercaptans and those thiourea's, especially the phenothiourea where it makes, the thing is, it's a the mercaptan, and in this is the compound that, not as the antibiotic, but when they use it in industry, that's in the families that they can put in, like your propane gas, so you can smell it. You're not supposed to breathe it if you can smell it. You're supposed to get out, call the gas company, get it fixed, you know, because that's why it's there, because propane you can't smell. But that gas, odorant gas, is highly toxic to the olfactory and the sensory, which goes back into other shows that we've had. But I find it interesting that it's the amount of dosage that can happen, or the weakens. I'm going to say if it's happening more, Rosalyn, with older people like your friend that was 92, then it could be that their enzymes are lower and they can't break it down or can't get rid of it as fast. And that goes back to, like you said, the bioactivity when it's like metabolized out of the body, it still is active because it could adhere to the DNA. It could do other things because that's what that particular family of compounds do. And we have a beautiful PowerPoint explaining this that was on the fluoroquinolones from structure to activity and toxicity that was done by the University, Catholic University in Brussels. It's attached to this show.
That's wonderful. And you've got a link to it, right?
Right. All of these audience, And Rosalind, we have the links, even the 65-page document. Shoshana's done a lot of work in getting it there, the patents, everything, so that you can make your own informed knowledge and know what you're dealing with, even if you're on this one dose with this any of this type of medication.
Well, it seems strange, to me, that they would prescribe this type of drug, especially when it's not recommended for people even 60 years of age or older, but
mm-hmm.
prescribe this drug to someone who had other problems, heart issues, for example. And it also seems strange to me that the hospital and the doctor said, oh, we prescribe that all the time. And when I confronted them and said, well, do you follow through with the patient you prescribed to see if these side effects showed up? Do you track them? Is there any method for that? And they said, oh, no, because the drug, you know, it would be rare to have any side effects. And I said, well, if you don't track them, then how can you say it's rare to have side effects?
I agree with you. And at the same time, I feel that they should track, and at the which we know a majority of hospitals don't do that, even some physicians don't do that. But the thing is, it should be done, because in any of this literature, I don't know if it was in your literature, the 65-page literature, but the first major recommendation that the Catholic University of Louvain in Brussels, Belgium recommends, you do epidemiology studies and follow the patients that you prescribe this medication to due to the effects of it.
And that's what's lacking in the United States. They're prescribing
mm-hmm.
this. And when I started to talk about this to people and friends and people I knew to warn them off, because I thought, gee, they're prescribing it for things that you would normally take for granted, that you wouldn't have tremendous side effects from the type of pills that used to be prescribed for these. And I was shocked and stunned by the number of people that recognized one of the brand names of these drugs and had been or previously had taken this drug and did not know and was never warned about the side effects of this particular drug. And I think it's much more wide, I think it's much more widespread than we think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because they're giving it to senior citizens with no follow-through, a lot of senior citizens who are in nursing homes and other areas having severe problems, which can be permanent if the side effects are not treated or not treated correctly. That's also in the literature as well.
Right, and also many healthcare providers, looking at it, there was a beautiful article done, and we have it on the link in reference to the dementia plague that was taken out of the Technology Review. And in this, the author, which was Stephen Hall, said that the generation, which I'm going to call the baby boomers and a little bit higher, if by the year, I think it's 1220, the 21st, it's our time, they're going to have like 20 million Alzheimer's or dementia patients. So what happened where people used to keep their mind, no calcification in the mind, standard used to be that if you're around pesticides or that, you breathed it, it calcified the front lobes of the brain, and you were more prone to dementia and Alzheimer's. Versus now, it's a lot of people that you hear. It's not like you go like 10 people you know and somebody in that family's got somebody with dementia.
Yes, and the statistics on who's going to get it and how many million people, you know, in other words, we're talking going into the billions at some point here, of people facing dementia or Alzheimer's. And here we are putting them through drugs that could cause this or could cause the symptoms to become permanent so that people would think that they had Alzheimer's or dementia, when in actuality the drug that they're taking produced this.
Right, and we're not saying, audience, that it's just the insert and reading the warnings. I mean, there has, as Rosalind has brought out, there has been a number of legal cases in reference to the side effects, It's standard on the National Institute of Health website for the warnings by taking Levaquin, and also the Mayo Clinic, and also the FDA has a warning in reference to its severe side effect of rupturing the muscles in the back of the leg, like the Achilles tendon in that.
Yes, and that causes permanent sometimes damage as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what's transpiring here is that a drug that was never designed to be used on the general population has been introduced and is being prescribed by doctors and at hospitals. And it's also raising the risk of MRSA as well. There's this bacteria that's very hard to kill.
Right, it's
and
staph.
It's,
yeah.
And it's staph, and it's showing up in hospitals. And they said that the only thing that reduces this type of MRSA in hospitals is to stop the use of Cipro.
Right, and I'm wondering if these medications have a nano delivery system or thin film time release, because in some, I remember an individual that had Cipro before, you know, I'm going to say about 10 years ago or so, and it was like they took only one or two pills of that medication. It was like a time released, and it may have definitely interactions that way, because in a lot of people that I've seen that were diagnosed with MRSA, when we put the soaps on that we use just to see if there's any silicone or polyurethane, it just oozed that material right out of it. So I definitely feel that there is some kind of thin film technology with it, you know, in the manufacture of it.
Well, it's
Cody.
Interesting here because Cody. I'm looking at her patient history here. And it says here Levaquin, but and it's under levofloxacin. And this 250 milligram tablet, you're supposed to take one tablet every 24 hours. So it has to have some sort of time release, because why would you be taking one 250 milligram tablet every 24 hours?
Right. And for how many days would that be? I mean, were they
I'm sure that they were giving it to her for at least 7 days.
Okay. And why that is, audience, normally, and Rosalind knows this, is that you have new blood within 7 to 10 days. So the thought being that you've affected all of the blood so that you don't get a reoccurring infection.
But the problem with this stuff is that it said that this can even cause infections.
Right, because what it does is this is a strong compound, meaning those hydroquinones and you know, in quinolones in all that category. What happens is it kills your natural flora, and at the same time, if you had I'm going to call it a true staph or true infectious compound there, meaning a microorganism, it can cause it to mutate, and then you might not be able to get rid of it. Because it says in the literature of that PowerPoint that staph and mycobacterium are the number one, the two pathogens that mutate very easily with exposure to that compound.
Well, it seems to me that this should be a drug that's only, if used at all, used as a last resort, but not as the hospitals and the doctors, even here where I live, have said, well, we use it all the time. It's routinely prescribed. And I was thinking, well, why is this routinely prescribed? Because
right.
of the dangers and the side effects. Never have I seen anything with side effects quite like this ever before.
Right. No, I haven't either. And also, just focusing on its original use, like the Cipro or that, for anthrax under bioterrorism activities, you know, for an antidote, under any medication that is part of that category or special category, there needs to be a 10-year supply. So the thing is, maybe I'm just looking at it economically, maybe because they got so much in storage somewhere that a decision was made to use it into the mass population when normally it wouldn't be there, or it would be thrown out in the garbage or gone to a hazardous waste dump.
That's my guess. Or they decided to let all of these different companies manufacture it and make money so that they could have an ongoing fresh supply. It's really hard to know, but I can tell you from the amount being prescribed that somebody's making a lot of money and the drug companies are making it. And I think that the doctors are complicit. Only one doctor in another county would admit that the person that was marketing and saying you should prescribe, you know, this particular drug had never told him what all the side effects were and had never told this doctor, just was kind of marketing that this is a new drug on the market for this and that. And the doctor was prescribing it, and he immediately stopped prescribing. But the other sinister part of this is that when I raised it with some doctors in their offices, actually speaking with them, there were a few doctors who knew of the drug. I've heard of this. I've heard of these drugs. I've heard of this. No further comment, just I've heard of this. Other doctors, and I can say this truthfully because this is what happened, there were other doctors who all of a sudden, when I had to go back for another appointment with Catherine to see her physicians, had called me back and said, I'm sorry, but we can no longer take her as a patient any longer.
Right, and which that makes it harder for yourself and herself, because I'm assuming that she's on Medicare. You know, she's of that age bracket, and she might have supplemental. But if that primary physician doesn't take her or refuses to see her, then she has to shop for another physician, like immediately, because then she can't use even maybe her hospitalization because the primary care doctor is not in that loop now. It gets rather confusing, you know, with the new I'm going to call it the new criteria that you have to meet.
But here's the problem. I don't think it was a thing about the criteria in other words, the healthcare law. I think that the doctors who said no, that they would no longer take her as a patient, were afraid that, one, not that they had given her the drug, but that they might have to testify that she's showing the symptoms if they saw her.
Right, and which that's a sad event because anyone in the healthcare provider, you know, the physicians, they take their oath, but they want, you would think that they would want to have the best quality for their patient, you know, but I understand that it could rock a hospital duty or anything, you know, privileges.
Oh, it could. And so when you have one hospital in an area because of the hospital monopolies, where you have to even travel out of the county to get a hospital that's not within the monopoly, very hard to get treated. You have to go to doctors far away. And then you have to find one that isn't so scared off by the fact that he's dealing with these symptoms or possible symptoms that he's going to even want to take the case. I mean, I just don't see this. I see this as being very complicated, with doctors being very afraid. Mm-hmm. But I think that what we have to do is we have to make it public, widespread public, that doctors who are prescribing this should be held accountable.
Yes.
And to really say, if you're going to prescribe this, then you're going to be held accountable at some point along the line because of these side effects. And we're going to let the public know what these side effects are and that they're at risk if they take these drugs.
Right. I'll give a prime example for like a reality check, even though it's a little off. Meaning, if you're a physician and you identified that a patient had like angiocarcinoma, which is known to be caused from exposure to polyvinyl chloride and arsenic, I would think that they want to, at least before they outline treatment or anything, at least test to see if there's any level in there so they know how much they have to deal with in trying to treat the patient and the interaction with those compounds.
Absolutely. And you see, they don't want to do the tests because the tests, if it's a hospital, the hospital may not want to do the test because they don't want to become involved in a lawsuit.
Right. There's, no proof in the pudding is to say. If you don't have, excuse me for interrupting you, Rosalind, if you don't have the analytical, how can you prove it? And if you have the analytical, let's get it qualified to go into court, you know. If you don't do the test, there's no evidence.
Right. And I think that this is part of what the resistance is and has been. And also to even, so the patient, essentially the patient with the problem suffers unless they have a tremendous advocate that's willing to, you know, go to the mat for them, essentially, and fight. And also you have this built-in resistance because they don't want to discuss it. They know, I'm sure they know, but they don't want to discuss it. They've been getting away with it for a number of years and think that they can continue to get away with it because the public will remain ignorant.
Right. Look at CPRO. It really came into effect with the anthrax, as you've found out, meaning that it's a prescribed drug of choice for anthrax, approximately in 2001. So we're now 11 years with that, and you know, it is an ideal drug for anthrax, but a lot of these patients don't have anthrax.
Well, think of it. The thing is that this can cause rheumatoid arthritis.
Right.
It's not to be given to people with arthritis, and yet the hospital dispensed this drug for a person with arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about side effects in which the hospital itself and the hospital pharmacy, because all hospitals have their own built-in pharmacy,
mm-hmm.
it means that someone has done a risk assessment. In other words,
correct.
They have
loss control or a risk assessment of its use.
Right. And what they've decided was that no one would figure it out, or that if there was a risk, they could keep it to a minimum, or they made some rationalization in their risk assessment that allows them to prescribe this in lieu of other drugs that would not have these type of side effects.
And I would go a step farther. I would say also possibly that maybe the hospital is connected into a teaching hospital, and they may be doing a study on this for a company or a private entity. It even could be universities or anything along that line. You have to look at that, because the small print that you sign when you're getting admitted says that, you know, you can be an experiment when you're in here if, you know, you don't read that little print.
Oh, absolutely. And also, I want to warn people about one other thing when they go to the hospital. When you go to the hospital treats you, and they can give you medications or shots or whatever it is, and they don't have to discuss with you what the treatment is. You may see the doctors long after they have prescribed some treatment and that you're already taking the medication long before, and they may never tell you while you're in the hospital what exactly that they're giving you. You may never have a clue. And I was kind of appalled at this, because I know years ago when I went with my mom, it was very easy. She had a hip replacement, and this was many years ago, but when she had her hip replacement, I absolutely got the chart. I knew exactly what they were giving her every inch of the way. And I nixed, they were giving her 11 drugs, and I said, no, you're not going to give her 11 drugs. You're going to cut this down, because they were giving her drugs to counteract the side effects of other drugs for things she didn't have.
Right.
And so we got it down to 3, and then we eventually got it down in a couple of days to 2. But what I wanted to say is that they don't keep that information now available so that you can just get a hold of it and figure it out, nor do they volunteer it. And so you're at a real disadvantage when you go to the hospital and think that they're going to be there to help you, and yet they're going to be dispensing drugs which are going to have serious problems either at the time or down the road, And your family, the person that, in other words, has a medical power of attorney, no one is going to be consulted before it's done.
Right, right. And that goes into that gray area of, I'm going to call it, when you sign that check-in to be admitted into the hospital, that it may have clauses like that, that you will be, you know, part of a study or that, and you don't even realize it. That way, and that, and if it's in that realm, there may be a total different record because it was in a study that may not even be part of your, I'm going to say, permanent hospital record, or even what your doctor reviews.
Yes, and also the only way that you could prevent this, in some ways, is that the only thing the hospital looks at when you're admitted is they look under your allergies. Do you have any allergies? And in there, you've got to put some things down that protect you from being given at entrance into the hospital. I mean, the first thing that they wanted to do with Catherine is they wanted to give her a pneumonia shot, a flu shot, and they had the consent forms right there for you to sign, to and the injection needle is standing right there with them. And they're going to rush you into taking flu shots, pneumonia shots. They have no idea what's wrong with you, but they're definitely going to get you to take all these things at the moment that you enter the hospital, practically. And so if you don't have something in allergies that says, look, fluoroquinolones or, in other words, statin drugs are another one. They'll put you on lowering cholesterol drugs, even though they know it impairs your memory. Down the road a couple of years, they'll put you on all kinds of drugs, and all of a sudden you go home and you have a, you've got a medicine cabinet full of pills.
Right, right. And then you don't use them, and then you put them down the toilet, and then we have all this endocrine disruptors or any of these other types of problems. So, meaning there's a lot going on that way. I'm curious to ask you, Rosalind, in the reading that you did, like on that 65-page document or anything that you had the opportunity to review, did you find anything where it says that it increased, like, I'm going to call it, I know it ruptures, the muscle rupture can rupture in the severe cases from the bone or the ligaments that hold the muscles in place, but did it specifically bring out swelling or anything? Why I'm asking this is because many times when you get calcium particles in there, it causes the swelling, the tightness that you can't bend, it like locks in. But the thing is that in that pressure, that stimulates the bone marrow to release more new stem cells, trying to get new cells out there, and the spleen to release more red blood cells for giving you more oxygen into that area. Oh,
yes,
I'm curious if
it
did.
Yes, it does talk about swelling.
Yeah, because that's one of the mechanisms, and what I've found and that. There's a whole technology, as we know, in artificial biology, and yes, many people have accidents. They need new arms, they need new muscles, they need cloned organs, whatever's out there, I guess, on the common market. But the thing is, I find it very interesting that the types of symptoms that are occurring, which are very odd symptoms, especially the rupture from of the muscle, is also can be part of the creation of the synthetic muscles and the repair of. In other words, if you had a medication that was out there and it causes the symptom, of course, industry or pharmaceutical, you would want the remediation of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's a very unique symptom. I mean, we see this in industry as being, racehorses that can pull their ligament, rupture a ligament, you know, because they're running or break it, like, you know, and they usually take the animal down, but or put it down. But the thing is, there's a lot of regenerative work being done in the veterinary medicine that way that I know, too, on the human side it's being looked at for tendon injuries. You know, or ruptures.
Yeah, Well, see, this is it says, get medical help right away if you notice any symptoms of a serious allergic reaction or any types of rash, swelling, especially of the face, tongue, throat, legs, dizziness, trouble breathing, this kind of a thing. And it goes on to note, after it gives you all of these serious side effects may occur, you can get bruising, bleedings, signs of new infection, fever, persistent sore throat. In other words, you can get another vaginal infection as well. And it says get help right away if you have any of these serious side effects. And because they say, well, if you can get help right away, you might be able to reverse them. Otherwise, they may not be reversible. Well, exactly now, what are we talking about here?
Right. What are we talking about? Because like you experienced firsthand, your friend took the medication, had the side effects, you went back to the hospital to get help, and simultaneously her physician did not want to see her anymore. So where do you get the help when even the insert is telling you to go and get the help?
Right, and when the doctors at the hospital refuse and ignore that this could be a problem and they don't want to treat you for these symptoms, even though you hand them the whole list and say, here it is and here's the documents, she needs to be treated, or because they may be reversible, but if you don't, it might not be. And in the face of that, what do you do when there's total denial? I mean, this is really, in other words, a part of the hospital that most people never see is that they're not going to treat you because they may get sued for giving you the drug in the first place.
Right, right.
And so there's something wrong with the system that's beginning to operate on this, in this method.
Right. And I honestly don't know if it's this, I mean, granted, with the acceptance of whatever is being stated, you accept that it happened. So I can understand that form of insurance law or liability that way. But at the same time, I'm wondering if the more chained hospitals, the more, I'm going to say, corporate nature of a hospital versus the small local private hospitals that many of us grew up with throughout the United States are now in a chain conglomerate of hospitals. If there's
any
relation with,
here.
With
sure.
That too.
And so as you get fewer independent hospitals or things like county hospitals, or in other words, where there's some independence and all you're involved in the chain is more likely to want to cover it up.
Right, right. And that and reduce the quote-unquote the liability of accepting it, that it is occurring. And now with any of this, there's the whole thing with, because it has such a unique side effect, which totally makes me want to focus on it, the ripping of the muscles from the leg. There is a whole other industry, too, that is looking into the biometrics and using, you know, the monitoring of the nerves and the nerve channels. I'm wondering if any of those type of new, what they call the microchips or sensories, may be in the formulation of this medication or these types of medications, because they have very unique, side effects.
It could be. And there was a note in the on the pharmacy literature that I got, and it says here, this product may contain inactive ingredients which can cause allergic reactions or other problems. Talk to your pharmacist for more details. Well, see, the thing is that you have to go then to your doctor or your pharmacist, and you have to say, well, if you've had a history of diabetes or heart pains, chest pains, a recent heart attack, kidney disease, nervous system disorder, seizure disorder. There's a whole list of things about
right.
brain and head injury, tumors, strokes, and all of this. Well, the thing is that older people probably have had one or more, or more susceptible. So why would they be giving it to older adults?
Right, and even, meaning just with that simple thing which you read earlier that, you know, you do not prescribe it to a person that's 62, she's 30 years older, she's 92, she should have never got it to begin with. And back to my situation, you know, in the monitoring, just with those symptoms that you highlighted on there and the types of treatment with those types of infections, there's like the company Protheus Digital Health, which we have the link there, that just got approval from the FDA that they can put the monitoring chip within vaccines and also into antimicrobial agents, you know, meaning like this type of medication that we're talking about. And audience, I don't know if it's in there or not, and neither does my guest, but what I'm saying is that the industry does have these capabilities, and it may be the listing of the inert compound. Because you also brought out that your friend got very thirsty, and one of the symptoms was the tongue swelled. And when it's those thiourea's or those mercaptan compounds like the quinolone, well, you know what I mean. These compounds, yeah. It's very important, audience. I can't say it, and then all of a sudden I'll say it, and then we'll be moved on. But they can react very fast. Sometimes they can react within 10 minutes and cause these symptoms versus, you know, days or past, you know, like it said, months.
Right. And or longer. It's hard to know because you don't know how long the studies have gone on to determine if it could be, in other words, 5 years, 10 years, in other words, how long. But also, they're talking about that it can give you a whole host of other diseases as well that you
mm-hmm.
may never associate with taking the drug for, you know, some sort of infection that you've had. You may never associate that drug with causing diabetes or something else that shows up later.
Right, right. You may never know. And it's where many people are starting to do this, take like a little notebook and write down what they take, what they've done, you know, over time or hospitalization, so that you have your own little book on it, even though we know that it might be within your records and everything. But you may need to know. And sometimes they're putting these little chips into the formulations as edible chips, et cetera, and they're like thin films, but meaning like just like a piece of saran wrap with sprinkles on it. But the thing is, and it's because it's to monitor you, in theory, to see if you are taking your medication that the doctor has prescribed.
Or any number of other things.
Right, we know that. We didn't fall off the turnip path, you know, the turnip truck or whatever, you know. And we
yeah.
didn't land on our head too often, you know. And we know how to thump some watermelons if we need them, you know. But
sure.
we don't make the ones that have the fungicides in it that explode when they got high humidity temperatures, you know, from years ago. That used to happen, but that's a whole other story. The thing is that it is sad that a person of her age, that she has to go through this. And, you know, it's like the no respect.
That's right. It's a lack of respect, and also it's a lack of paying attention to the patient as being a real person just because you're old. But I mean, younger people, you and I and my grandson and, you know, my grandsons or anyone, in other words, my daughter-in-law could go in for some sort of infection and all of a sudden wind up with this drug. And
right.
the thing is that how are you going to know and figure out in this world of these horrible drugs that are now being prescribed, how are you going to find out that this is going to have these side effects, and you could have this long-term effects. And how are you going to associate it? And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, you know, doctors are supposed to, you know, kind of in past history, do no harm. But we're at an age where patients do not say to their doctors when they're in the doctor's office, the doctor says, well, I'll write out a prescription for that, and they write out this prescription, you take it to your pharmacist. Well, these doctors all have computers sitting there, and you say, no, doctor, I want you to look that up and print out a list of the side effects while you're here. I want to talk to you about the side effects before I leave your office. In other words, force them to take the time to have to do it and go over the side effects with you. Not necessarily the pharmacist who's paid to do that, and they do that, and you should probably go to your pharmacist and ask them to look at all your drugs and see what the interactions are between all of them, or anything else you might be taking over the counter. They're qualified to do that. But the issue is we have to put the doctors back on the line and say, look, if you're going to prescribe something for me, you better know what the side effects are in case I show up with them next week.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, put it back on them to say, what are the side effects? And, for example, with this Levaquin, it says right here, laboratory and or medical tests such as kidney function, blood count, and cultures should be performed periodically to monitor your progress or check for side effects. Well, they didn't do that for Catherine
right.
When they prescribed the hospital, prescribed the drugs. They didn't say that she had to be monitored after she got out of the hospital. None of the three times that she was in, just for the side effects.
Yeah, and it says right there, so meaning you have the support of the manufacturer, and it's where the hospital administration of the hospital is not following recommendations even by the manufacturer.
That's right. So when you look at this, in other words, and the list of drug interactions just on the initial sheet I got from the pharmacist, it has three pages talking about all the things you can't take over the counter. Or all the things, no fiber. You're not supposed to have fiber within so many hours of taking this pill. No fibrous materials. You're not supposed to have this. You're not supposed to eat that. Well, the thing is, how many people are going to read this whole entire, when you're in a hospital, first you're given this without going over this list of things that you can or cannot do. The second part of this thing is that when you go home, nobody sits down with the whole list of the things that you can or cannot eat and tells you that you've got to come back for lab work and all those other things. In her case, it did not happen. In this case, in other words, she couldn't see a doctor afterwards because they refused to see her because
right.
They knew that Levaquin was a problem. So I'm looking at all of this thinking to myself, these doctors are prescribing a lot of medications, and there could be others that are just as bad, but they're giving you all these medications, and then there's no follow-up to see what the effects are, or if you show up in the office. For example, one of the things on Levaquin is nausea. You can get nausea or you can get diarrhea. So you call the doctor and you say, I have nausea and diarrhea. He looks it up and sees this is a side effect, and what he does is instead of taking the action he should, he just gives you a prescription, an anti-nausea, anti-diarrhea prescription. So then you wind up with more prescriptions.
Yeah, versus saying possibly, let's wean you off the medication and drink some mint tea to settle your stomach or chamomile. You know, something just, you know, to help out instead versus the combined effect and that. Rosalyn, please stay on for our second half. And audience, we're going to continue this open discussion of the compounds that I can't say the name for. Okay, how do you say it, Rosalyn, again?
Fluoroquinolones.
You got it. Okay, so we'll be back with you in about a minute or two. Thank you, audience and guests. Welcome back, audience, to the One Cell, One Light radio show with our host, me, Dr. Hildegard Steininger, commonly known as Dr. Hildy, and I have our special guest, Rosalyn Peterson. And we were talking about the effects of fluoroquinolones. I'm getting there. And I also, Rosalyn, we left it off with the side effects and what is needed to be occurring in the hospitals or with the doctors, and the state that your friend, it's like her doctor fired her, and now she has to search for a doctor in between of getting the side effects of this medication. There was also where these particular types of quinolonium compounds, they also, as you brought out, that they metabolize out of the body fast, but they also can lodge into different organ systems. And again, it goes back into neuromuscular blocking areas. Like, I would assume that would include the neuroblocking modulation. In other words, how a nerve would fire certain enzymes or not fire enzymes in stimulating the release of these compounds. And why those compounds are important is because they're usually made up of a coronary, which means like an ammonium compound, which is NH4. Instead of ammonia having NH3, three hydrogen around it, it has four. Hello, Rosalyn?
Oh, I'm here. Okay. I didn't know you were talking.
Where I was going to go with this is that particular type of compound, I thought I was here by myself, the audience of all those 114 countries now, the thing is that type of compound, the NH4, which is also used in silanes, siloxanes, or anything, but in this type of formulation, as we mentioned, goes into those thiols, ureas and that, they are notorious for interacting with cholinesterase. And I love studying cholinesterase beyond a pesticide. So I find this interesting because I know from my experience with pesticides or any of this, getting a physician even to look at the cholinesterase levels has been a hard row. The end of this month on the 21st will be 32 years. And it's been a hard row that way to let them see that.
Yes, and that's been the problem, is that when we come up with finding that these drugs are on the market, or herbicides, pesticides, insecticides are on the market, there's a tremendous resistance to conducting the studies. If they're ever done, there's a tremendous resistance in ever accepting that these would cause a problem. And so we become the guinea pigs to test these things out, and then have to fight when, you know, a protracted long-term battle to get, in other words, redress for the grievances that these drugs or other types of chemicals cause. And this has been problematic. It's like, well, we'll try it first. We're going to give you the dose first, and then we'll see what happens.
Right.
And I'm more and more working to reject that premise in the first place, and to really hold accountable, which I think we all need to do, our doctors and those that want, in other words, hospitals and others who want to prescribe, that we begin to hold them accountable in the beginning, prior to the time we take the drug, prior to the time that we accept that this is the only thing that can be done. Because we, as going to be the guinea pigs for the experiment, need to say, look, before I'm a guinea pig for this experiment, what else do you have that's on the market that might not be as cause these side effects? In other words, what are my alternatives? And that's when your pharmacist comes in. That's when, in other words, your different degrees and levels of thinking have to come in, and you have to do a little research before you just jump in and say, oh, yes, I'll just willingly take this pill.
Right. You can no longer do things blindly. You cannot be a little sheep and just, or the little duck going up the Yangtze River. You cannot do that anymore. You need to question it. You need to make your own decision. And if you're in a situation where you need to discuss it with your family, then you discuss it with your family, because it's your temple, your body. You're the one who's going to have the effects of it, good or bad, from whatever your decision is made, whatever you make your decision to be.
Yes, and I think that we have to become willing to challenge doctors and willing to challenge the medical gods on this, and to be able to say that we're going to really do some research, and that you can either be a partner in this, or if you insist, then I'm going to find someone else, because I need somebody that's going to advocate for me, and my doctor should be the one advocating for me, not prescribing a drug that's going to cause me all kinds of problems down the road.
Right, and that also goes into the schools, meaning that are teaching medicine. They should be very pro with the patient, and it's like, I'm going to do it like a little joke, meaning they're in practice. Does that mean they're practicing on you the rest of their life? But it's where it needs to be more open and more commitment. I mean, let's put it this way. If we had this situation occurring and we were in school and we didn't know our multiplication tables, we would definitely have to fail third grade or second grade, wherever we were taught that task.
Yes.
You know, and instead of just passing through, and many that happens too, and then you are totally do not know how to do your times tables, and then you have all these problems. So it's time that if anyone in the medical is taking those responsibilities to prescribe something that has these tremendous side effects. I mean, look at the side effects that happened to your friend at 92 versus if it was given to an athlete or anything that uses their muscles all the time, and then, meaning it's always, in other words, stimulated their muscles, that's what I'm saying, they might be at a higher risk than one who is stationary, not being stimulated all the time. You know, not running around a baseball court or any of that type stuff, you know?
Sure.
And I think there's all, I've always said, even back to the pesticides, it's like, why doesn't the doctor ask you, do you use pesticides in your home? Do you have a monthly spray? What is that? And is that going to react with the medication that you're being prescribed? Because sometimes they do react that way. They make you weaker in enzymes, and you can't break down the compound that you've been prescribed that way.
That's correct. And, for example, a patient could be taking antacids containing magnesium or aluminum or, in other words, iron or multivitamin preparations or zinc or other things. People take pills over the counter, different kinds of pills all the time. But when you use this medication like Levaquin, then you're not supposed to do that. And so you see, the thing that you may do at home on a normal routine basis may not be what you might or should be doing when you're taking this medication, because it could cause complications. And the list for this particular drug is so long, it could take you a day of reading to list everything that you're not supposed to be doing when you're taking this drug.
Yeah, and it might be easier just for them to put an insert with it and saying, this you can do, you know, when it's like that. The other thing is, with these compounds, when they interact with the neuromuscular modulation or any of that that reaction, if you were taking a compound, another, say you were on like a benzodiazepines, I'm going to have trouble with that one, because
benzodiazepines,
you got it, like Valium, Albion, and all those. those alone in the new studies that we have posted, you know, from the British Medical Journal, that anyone that's taking them is running a 50% greater risk of having Alzheimer's than ones that were not never used the drugs. So if you were taking that and then had this severe infection or anything and given another type of medication that affects, and you know, basically chemically induced dementia, like your friend experienced in those 3 days after taking it and confusion and that, to me it would be even increasing the risk from above 50%.
Well, see, here's what happens. When we know that taking sleeping medications in other words, whether it's something like you hear advertised all the time on television, for example, Lunesta or something, well, we do know that's going to possibly lead to dementia or memory impairment in some ways, according to some of the studies that I've seen recently in the last couple of years. And when we look at this and we combine it, so say that you're giving me Levaquin or Cipro or something, and then I can't sleep, so you give me a sleeping pill. How is that going to compound your problem,
right?
Or make it permanent?
Right, and also making it permanent, making that risk greater. And then if you're an individual that, say, maybe you had a blood clot and so you're prescribed statins, and how that is going to interact because you're trying to make thinner blood, like using the warfarin or any of those types of the other one's the spice. But the thing is, you know, it's rat poison to thin the blood. At the same time that you may have interactions with the iron, because as you stated earlier, the different compounds that could be in the formulations could interact with the charges of the different natural metals that, I'm going to say, elements, those metallic elements that you need in your body.
Well, sure, absolutely. And, you know, this Harvard study about the dementia risk from sleeping tablets, one of the things that came out of this is that they say, well, the side effects could be so harmful, doctors should avoid prescribing them. Scientists believe sleeping pills may interfere with neurotransmitters in the brain, possibly causing dementia. And when you look at this and you look at the studies of the millions of prescriptions being handed out every year for sleeping pills and these benzodiazepines, yeah, I know the wording is really interesting.
There are those unique families, and you know, those names we haven't seen since organic chemistry, you know, we're trying to figure out how to name the structure.
They were saying that older people who use the benzodiazepines, for example, diazepam, for example, were 50% more likely to succumb to dementia. And this was a Harvard University study. So I'm looking at this and I'm going to the studies that we're seeing here, and I'm thinking to myself that if you're going to, you're looking at the rates of dementia increasing.
Right.
The studies are all showing that dementia and Alzheimer's are increasing. And if we take a look at the chemicals and at the drugs that we're taking that could induce that, is this what we want to be taking? Because do we want to wind up without our brain power and to have memory problems and dementia and Alzheimer's when we get older? I mean, that's...
Yeah, we don't want to be in line for a chip either, you know?
No. So you're talking about drugs, you know, in other words, that are obtained by, in other words, a prescription. And we know that there's problems. And the more studies that come out, the more we know about this list of problems. And it's just scary to understand that our doctors are not taking a stand for us. And that's where we're lacking. We're getting a group of doctors, and we're not having general practitioners anymore who kind of took care of your overall well-being in past history, in essence.
Right, family practice, yes.
Yeah, we're having a group of doctors who are all in their own technical fields. In other words, well, my specialty is cardiology. My specialty is, surgeries, and tendons and all of this, and different doctors do different things. Well, you're running the gauntlet of every doctor prescribing something different for you, that you're seeing a mass number of doctors, and that no doctor, other than seeing you for 5 minutes in his office at most, or maybe 6 minutes, because it's all time now, that your doctor sees you for a couple of minutes, he has no idea about your overall care or what you may need, and he barely has time to listen to any of your ailments. He has no time at all to spend with you. So essentially, he is becoming, like a local pharmacy. He's dispensing medications, but he doesn't have to give you the side effects even.
Right. I agree with you 100%. And even recently this month, we had that outbreak where there was a medication that was given to individuals that was like a vaccine. It was where it had a fungus in it, and made, 11 people died and 13,000 became sick because they got meningitis, which was swelling of the brain, et cetera. Now, probably, I don't know if this happened or anything, they might have been given these drugs that we're talking about, too, after the fact, after they got exposed to the other chemical.
It's hard to know, but think of this problem. The drugs were widely prescribed. They're not releasing the names of the hospitals. They're not really that gave this, where these drugs were administered. They're secretly trying to cover up. In other words, where people might have exposures, because they're afraid that people are going to say, look, I was given this drug, I want to know, and before I get this meningitis or something. And so they're withholding some information from the public. I mean, did they really pull all of the different drugs that were contaminated? Have they pulled them? Or are they storing them for some future use or to ship them somewhere else? We don't know. Are they being destroyed? We don't know that either. There's a lack of information about this, other than kind of a roll call of how many people are sick and how many people have died. But now the point comes when they talk about the numbers of people that could have gotten this, and this meningitis may show up sometime down the road. We don't know how long. We don't know if and when and all of these things. This is a very scary thing, and this is another reason why we have to wonder, as we go through all of these different drugs and how they can be contaminated, because we know that drugs coming in from other countries aren't good and have been contaminated in the past, and we know that the idea that we are protected by a government that is no longer engaged in doing the research to find out if these things are safe is another issue for all of us.
Right, and which this goes into, whether it's government, whether it's the physicians, whether it's anyone out there, it's basically your commitment, your individual commitment to your own quality of the work style that you operate in. Meaning for anyone, if they're going to do it halfway, they're going to do a halfway job versus being committed to doing the best that they can under the conditions and reading the stuff. I mean, each one of us, yourself, myself included, I'm ready. I had to read a book in 2 days. So that's my homework for the guest that's going to be on next week. So the thing is, you have to make a commitment, and doing it right or doing it wrong or doing it halfway. And if you do it halfway, you're going to have the consequence of a halfway job.
That's right. But here's the other issue about doctors. Doctors are kind of taking the positions that, in not all doctors, but in many cases, I think they take the position that they're there as drug dispensers for the drug companies and the advertising on television. In other words, take the sleeping pill. Take all of these different drugs for psychiatric problems. Take this, take that. The drug companies are making enormous amount of money, but when you know, they're getting people to hear about the side effects, but order this drug from your doctor. Ask your doctor for this drug that's supposed to cure some symptom, but the people are seeing a visualization on the screen which shows happy people with no problems, but they're reading off a list of side effects which are enough to scare you to death.
Right, and those side effects, I mean, even, you know, you might have a compulsive, we've talked this with Rick DeBove, I think even maybe once or twice when you were on the show, meaning you have a sudden urge to go gambling, you know, from the medication that's used in that restless leg syndrome, which could be from pesticide exposure, but no one's looking at that, and at the same time, sudden urge to go gambling when you never had that, but the gambling rate is you bet over 100,000 or more. I mean, those are weird side effects, just like the muscles being ripped. And the thing is that it's taking, where does the misconduct occur? You know, in finding, it's like the misconduct of the hospital. They have an insert that says it's going to do this, but they refuse to work with you, Rosalind, for your friend. And at the same time, the reaction with the physician.
That's correct.
To me, it's totally misconduct, you know, for in their field. There's really, even though they're professionals, it's not professional because they're not taking their job serious. It's just basically covering themselves.
Well, sure it is. And the idea that you can cover yourself because you say, well, it's routinely prescribed.
Well, tell that to your insurance
carrier.
How
do you know that this hasn't been given to a massive amount of senior citizens who are now in nursing homes or beyond help somewhere because no one diagnosed that when they took this drug months or weeks or years before that they're now in the hospital suffering from dementia or other mental problems and hallucinations or whatever it is, and no one ever identified that the reason that they're in this condition might be because they've been taking this particular drug or others.
Right, and it's like you said with the commercials, are that it tries to make it soft. It tries to make it user-friendly. It's no harm, even though it does all this stuff. I mean, even now they're even prescribing and putting on what they call dental tattoos that go on your teeth. It looks like a little motorcycle or whatever a child or a young adult might want. It looks chic, maybe to them, not to me, but it monitors your health and monitors if you've been taking your medications.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, we have the warnings of DEET and all these other spray medications, not medications, but pesticides that you spray on your body. You're absorbing it. It's like when the scabies lotion came out, which had the malathion in it at 0.5% and goes right to the nervous system. The peripheral nerves are right under the skin. And turn around, the level for a workplace exposure for 15 minutes was 0.02. So how does 0.5 be safe in a lotion when it says it causes not skin problems, but absorption, and then now you see all these unique neurological diseases. Example like trigger finger, where you didn't used to see that.
Oh, that's right. Oh, absolutely.
So I see just from observation, if we just took the newspapers or our you know, Science Daily, any of the things, because we all read a lot, if you start comparing, well, this new medication's here, this is the new disease, and this is the other stuff, there's a pattern occurring. I'm doing like the Catholic University recommended, do your own epidemiology. You see that something's going on, even the soft fluff, even, you know, the term, and I thought the individual was just making a joke of it, but in reality it wasn't, you know, the term even nano cupcakes, nano chocolate nut clusters, meaning these are soft words used in advertising and marketing to describe a high-tech nanotechnology, because that's what the category is now. But when you hear nano cupcake, you don't think it's something bad or good. You just think, oh, cupcake, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's the new marketing, I'm saying, you know, that they make it soft and fluffy, so people will accept it. Even we had on this, not going off the track, but they're putting a spermicide in a breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
I mean, one, it's a medication, but is that also, I mean, who knows, you could have a child eat that and then turn around, then you wonder why they're infertile as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a whole, like, pattern, you know, give you this disease, promote this, or, you know, definitely make you sterile, male or female, so that then you can pick your clone baby or whatever you want, I guess, or maybe your little android. I don't know. I just know that everything that was in the movies and the sci-fi 20 years ago, it is really happening in real life.
Yes, and it's being advertised and marketed in a way that to scare people into using it, or to have people take these things that are not good for them or are going to have so many side effects that they're going to spend the rest of their life sick.
Right, and is it... are you, like, I'm intrigued with our compound that I can't say too well, fluoroquinolones.
Yeah.
You know, that specifically two enzymes in there will help make the DNA mutate. Is that whole thing of the use of these medications and, you know, really pushing them out there into the public, is that a way to prep your body to mutate your gene or to accept an aerial gene therapy? I don't know, but the science is there. It could be.
And it could be, and we just don't know.
Right, we just don't know, but there are many little light bulbs lighting up and throughout the world. At least we know there's 114 countries that listen to us, Rosalind, and they're enjoying your guest appearance with me today.
Well,
you know?
It's good to let people know that they're going to have to be proactive in double-checking and pushing their medical providers, whether hospitals or doctors or psychiatrists or dentists, if even known to be. I found out that dentists even prescribe Levaquin in these in other words, for infections, you know, before you go in and have dental work, why you need to go take an antibiotic, and this is one of the ones that is routinely prescribed now, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you could walk in on your dentist. You could walk in an area that you might not suspect are going to deliver a drug which could have life-threatening or long-term consequences.
Right, right.
And a dentist does not take a medical history. Even as much as a doctor, they take a very, you know,
minimal
kind of a couple of pages, and it's just write out a couple of things. But the dentist that's prescribing is not looking at the USDA or USFDA bioterrorism drug list to see if it's on a drug list you can bet.
Oh,
but
I definitely. I would think that they would not. I mean.
So you've got to look at all the people that are prescribing, not just a doctor, but you've got to look at your dentist, you've got to look at anyone, psychiatrist, anyone who's doing any type of prescribing, because you never know what you're likely to come up with.
Right, and we've experienced, meaning you've shared your story, you know, with our audience in reference to what your friend experienced, and we're bringing this light out in reference to this family of medications. But I honestly don't know, but I would think that possibly some derivative of it, of these types of medications, may be used in veterinary medicine, too, for a persistent infection or standard treatment with an animal, large or small. So if you have any animals, whether they're domestic, you know, cats and dogs in your home or a farm or anything, do look into what you may be giving them as an antibiotic, because it might be in this family of medications too.
Well, the other thing that concerns me, whether it's the fluoroquinolones or the diazepines or, in other words, the statin drugs, any of them, is that they're beginning to not only prescribe to older, but they're prescribing to younger and younger all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I want to talk about briefly, if it's okay with you, is the statin drugs, which are given to you to lower cholesterol. And the statin drugs have a problem. There's a U.S. FDA warning, which talks about the Food and Drug Administration, and this is in 2012, February 29, 2012, this year. The Food and Drug Administration added new safety warnings to cholesterol-reducing statin drugs on Wednesday, noting increased risks of type 2 diabetes and memory loss for patients who take the medication. The changes to the prescribing information apply to a class of statins, including many popular prescribed drugs such as Lipitor, Crestar, Zocar, and Vytorin, and Simvastatin, and that some of the changes have even reduced the amount of the drug that you should be prescribed. So if you're taking some of these drugs, you not only have to look at the amount prescribed, because it may be too much, the milligrams may be too high and have been reduced by the federal government without your knowing it or the doctor knowing it. And the thing is that you are giving your children cholesterol-lowering drugs now at younger and younger ages, as young as 2 or 3 years old. When it's discovered that they have, in other words, high cholesterol, we're going to give you this drug, even if it impairs, could give you type 2 diabetes and memory loss down the road. We're giving it to seniors. One of the things that one of Catherine's doctors did is he took her off simvastatin because I challenged him and said that the pharmacy had said that the amount of the cholesterol-lowering drug had been reduced to maybe 1/8, and that there could be other cholesterol drugs which wouldn't have certain side effects. The doctor, when I challenged him, took her off all of them and said she shouldn't be getting it at her age at 92 anyway, because the side effects were too great for any of the, in other words, the statin-type drugs. So here we are with cholesterol-lowering drugs, two big hits, memory loss and diabetes. We're talking about Levaquin, which can give you hallucinations, which can give you dementia symptoms, memory loss, all of this. And we're talking about sleeping pills, which can lead to developing Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are some of the most massively prescribed drugs in the United States right now for all ages.
Right, right. And it's like, why is your cholesterol going up? It's probably because you were exposed to some chemical, and it is a natural function to go up and also even increase triglycerides because it needs to bind the chemical. And no one's looking at that before they prescribe these medications and then end up having consequences or complications from it.
Absolutely. And think of this, though. We're talking about massive increases in Alzheimer's and people with dementia. Massive. It's going to be terribly expensive. It's going to cause family disruptions. It's going to cause all kinds of problems, not only here in the United States, but worldwide. We're talking about people who are no longer going to be able to take care of themselves. We're talking about handing out prescription drugs like candy to all ages, starting to know that these drugs are going to have serious side effects for our brains. Not
right.
To talk about the other effects, but
right.
just in memory. And can you imagine, you slow down sometimes mental function when you get older, but then to be handed 2 or 3 drugs, sleeping pills and statin drugs and, something that you might take for pneumonia or a vaginal infection or sinusitis or something. And instead of giving drugs that are not going to have this impairment, we're handing them out to all ages.
Right. And like when you get exposed to pesticides, in particular malathion, diazon, any of those carbamates, and even some nanomaterials that are made of those carbamates, the first symptom is you lose amino acids, and in particular you lose GABA, which is known if you have a zero level, you can get seizures. And these seizures don't have to be like grand mal seizures like Julius Caesar had, but these can be just blank stares or like your mind just drifted at that moment. And a lot of this, and they're saying that this type of GABA screening, the loss of GABA is occurring more and more. And the thing is, a lot of the universities, like the University of California in San Francisco, is now looking at the transplantation of embryonic neuron cells, stem cells, but neuron type, in treating this type of brain disease. When a lot of these physicians or any of this don't even look at what's your amino acid level. We learned this with Dr. Gersten, who was a guest on the show, to establish what do you have and can it be supplemented with amino acids so you don't have these effects? Because a lot of times you're lacking the enzymes or the amino acids because of this interaction of medication, pesticides, or other aerial dispersants.
Yes. Absolutely.
And go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
What I was going to say is if you have a population, whether it's anywhere in the world, that is now basically losing their mind because they can't think, they have dementia, they can't remember where they are or anything. I mean, there can be, as I call it, none of the dementia is easy, but easier you just forgot your name for a minute or two versus taking a car and driving across the United States and forget how to get home. The thing is, pardon me, that in each one of these cases or this whole trend that's occurring of dumbing down and not allowing your brain to think back to the pineal gland calcification, any of this thing, it's like robbing that connection of your soul to your creation or creator, and at the same time, it's like you've got an empty temple there.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to take care of you? Are you going to put them in a nursing home or assisted living or anything like that? Can you afford it? Because some of those assisting living facilities is like $4,000 or more a month.
Yeah, it's $4,000 or $7,000 a month easy. Nursing home care is a good $7,000 a month running now. I'm familiar with this because I've had to be doing some research on this recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are you going to afford it? There's going to be more abuse of elders who have these problems. I mean, just and more drugging of adults who have the problems because to make care easier. I mean, all kinds of things are going to, the horror story is about to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to unfold on all the people that are going to be engaging in this high-risk behavior of taking things that can impair them down the road.
Right, and it's like, look within your own little circles, like your family and your friends and that. If you go down that road, they may be the ones that are making the decisions to put you in a home or take you away or take care of you. You don't know. Because
no,
that person who has it would be out of it. They wouldn't know what was going on anyway.
Right. And also, but here's the thing. Do I want to face having dementia or Alzheimer's or all of this too? Because at some point, if I'm taking all these medications, the odds of my having this are going to increase. There's no doubt.
Right. Increase with the medication. I think it's time for audience and anyone who's listening to this show to really look at your brain health and start taking like Hildegardicus, Victorious, any of these things, less than anything, to increase your brain power, get those capillaries and everything going well into the brain. And at the same time, there's beautiful tapes that you can listen or CDs that increase the brain power and the mental capacities within your brain, and it doesn't hurt, those things will not hurt you, because at the same time it would increase your knowledge and your synthesizing portions of your brain, so you can really think on yourself. It's time to think for yourself.
It is, but it's also time to realize that when you take a drug like the fluoroquinolones, like Levaquin or Cipro or all of those, and you're taking them for pneumonia, acute sinusitis, chronic bronchitis, skin and skin structure infections, you're talking about urinary tract infections, but that's both for men and women too, and you're talking about these things. The problem with the drug is that the side effects could be permanent.
Right, right. Very good point.
And there's a difference there with this particular drug, because when they say it could be permanent, and they say if you're treated with the wrong treatment, when you have the side effects, it could be permanent. And when they tell you that if you're not treated, your dementia, your symptoms of hallucinations and mood swings and mental changes and personality changes, which with my friend Catherine, I did see, she had a violent personality change for a bit. And also, you have to understand that when she was exposed to Levaquin at the end of August, she is still experiencing from time to time the side effects. It doesn't go away, or it doesn't stop just because you want it to with time. In her case, it's continuing. And so she has good days, but she also has days in which you can just see the symptoms, and they're the same ones, and they just pop right back up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the hallucinations, and it's the mental changes. And you can see this in her ability to function and do certain things at certain times. So the concern here is that, yes, you have to understand that some of the things you may be taking may be temporary, but it's not looking that way. And with the fluoroquinolones, it's looking like they could be permanent, especially if you don't get treatment or the treatment is wrong.
Yeah, that's it. And but you brought out a very important point, permanent. It's there. It's not like you didn't have a choice, meaning you took it and then you have a permanent disorder that is related to it.
That's right. And that's what's scary. And it doesn't matter whether it's a tendon rupture. It doesn't matter whether it's other type of problems. What matters is that you're taking a drug sometimes without being aware that the side effects down the road months later could be permanent.
Right.
And do the people treating you know what the treatment is to reverse it, if there is such a thing?
Right, right. And it's a question, too. I mean, if we were physicians and we were prescribing it, I would think if something was going to be a 50% risk of having a bad effect on it, I think I would be advising my patient or recommending something that would not be as hazardous.
Yes, and there are drugs that aren't as hazardous. There are things that you can do. There's some over-the-counter things sometimes. There's other things that you can do that aren't going to endanger your future health or lead to some of these things that we've been talking about today.
Right. And in this, I mean, all of us have gone to a physician's office or sometime in our life may have gone to a hospital, you know, as a young adult or even older adult. But the thing is, a lot of times we don't even ask the questions. In this particular program, with any type of medication, I think you need to ask audience, what are the side effects? What will happen with me? Is this a true medication or is it, it's like penicillin. Penicillin used to come from the penicillin mold, but now it hasn't since the end of World War II, 1947. It was all synthetically made with amines and, you know, amides type compounds. So ask.
And I think that you have to ask what the, you know, is this drug rated as a U.S. Food and Drug Administration bioterrorism drug?
You have to ask
some really pertinent questions. And your doctor now has a computer sitting at his desk. He now has the capability and staff to go look up anything you want and give you copies and discuss it with you. And I think that whether it's the dentist or the doctor or the psychiatrist or whoever's doing the prescribing, that there definitely has to be a take here, that you're going to be asking those questions and not let them off the hook, that they're just going to call in a prescription and you're going to rush down and take it without having a huge discussion with your pharmacist.
Right, right.
And, you know, one of your lines of defense, too, is your pharmacist. If you're given a prescription or you're not sure about something you're taking, any pharmacist, you can go in and talk. They've gone through more probably medical training than a doctor in some cases, and they are there to tell you about the combination of drugs you're taking, over-the-counter drugs, as well as all of your prescription drugs. They can evaluate this for you and let you know if there's any hazard warnings, if something shouldn't be taken in conjunction with these drugs, if the combination of all the drugs you're taking are not good for you. There's a lot of areas of which your pharmacist could help you, and also they're very good at over-the-counter drugs as well.
Right, right, right. And some of the pharmacies, meaning the drugstores and that, are now even carrying natural products, you know, vitamins and stuff like that. So you can get a full selection. If you're going to take any type of antibiotic, you definitely want to be taking some kind of probiotics or that to regain your natural flora within your body, too.
So, you know, this is I feel strongly that the warning needs to be put out in no uncertain terms, that there are certain things that you just need to know. Now, you know, we're talking about people not being able to sleep. Well,
right.
One of the things, you can go and look up LED lighting. These
mm-hmm.
new LED lights that they have out now, they said if you have exposure to LED lighting, it's going to be harder for you to go to sleep at night, especially when you're exposed 2 or 3 hours before you actually go to bed at night. So there's all kinds of things that are happening to us in the environment of which we don't understand, but one of the new studies came out this year talking about LED lights, and they said if your exposure is just before you go to bed where you've been using LED lights, then you're probably not going to sleep as well at night.
Right, and this might be... I don't know. I know what you're saying with the LED lights, but I don't know the mechanism that would trigger it, because a lot of LED lights may be emitting the photons of light or at a certain frequency, a certain wavelength, and maybe that has a play a role on that. Because I know that people that would take or be deficient of melatonin, because the neurotransmitter, and if they took melatonin, they would not go to sleep if they had the lights on. If they turn out the lights, they could go to sleep, you know, with the melatonin.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be an interaction that way, but that's something for us to look into in the future, in future shows that way.
Well, I think that it's just important to know that we're living in a society with ever-increasing technological gadgets, some of which may not be good for us and our health, and some of us which may impair us in some ways. And so sometimes it's just good to raise a question and let people think about these things that are going on in the environment around them,
mm-hmm.
and just to bring it to their attention. And I didn't mean to bring a subject up that was kind of new, but it was new to me because the study just came out.
Right. Right. No, I think it's wonderful. And also, you know, as we know with cell phones or any type of electromagnetic force, they can increase the risk of cellular damage. But if you're taking a medication or exposed to a hazardous material or pesticides or any of those categories, when you're around those fields, it can break it make it more concentrated in certain areas of the body too, just as some of the newer technology is looking at using magnetic fields in relation to helping breaking it down within the body. But you have to know how to use it proportionally so you don't bring too much toxin out and don't have enough of whatever the agent is that you're using to bind it up too. But there's so many, I mean, I'm glad I'm not in the super regulatory business anymore, because I'd be quite busy, you know, as I call it, red tagging it out.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the other thing I'm concerned about in the overall scheme of things is that we don't have one exposure route. We could have many.
Yes.
And the exposure route of common drugs and common things that people take over the counter, common things that people use, some good, maybe not, some not so good, but we have to really take a look at what we're doing to ourselves and say, look, is this really going to be worth it? Is there, and if we raise questions that protect ourselves about using something that isn't so toxic to our systems or our brains, and finding out, asking questions about things that may be better for us in the long term, I think we're going to have a better quality of life.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that we should just run down and take every drug known to mankind. That's not on the list.
I don't take any, so
I don't take any at the moment either. And so I really feel that's why some people don't feel very well, is because they suffer the side effects of the drugs that they're taking.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know the side effects, and or if you have a side effect and you go to your doctor and he's prescribed one pill and you say, well, I have these side effects, when do you ever see the doctor look up that medication you're taking and say, gee, this is a side effect of the medication you're taking, and reduce it or do something different? You see them prescribe another pill to reduce the problem.
Right. And I know myself, prior to this show, I have seen a lot of individuals that were on a lot of different antibiotics and that. And as they come forward again, I'm going to cross with what those medications are, because in some cases we found a high amount of ammonia in their body, and it may be from this coronary ammonia buildup. I mean, it would show the same type of test result, even though it had one extra hydrogen there, but it would have the same effect on the body when it breaks down.
Sure. And the other thing that I think is really important is that this information is out there. It's not a secret. It's not being hidden. Your pharmacist has it. Your doctor can look it up. You can look it up online. You can go and get the U.S. FDA report, Food and Drug Administration report on the quinolones, on the statin drugs that we talked about, on the sleeping pills that we talked about today, and other things. This is not a secret, and the side effects are not a secret. It's just that we haven't availed ourselves of this, or have no knowledge that this is happening and that we're at risk. Without knowing it, if an emergency, we may go to a hospital and have an infection.
Mm-hmm. That's it. It's really informing yourself, and you make your decision. But at the same time, if there's something that's strong out there, there might be something that is less toxic that you can choose from, and your physician can help you with that assistance. But definitely your pharmacist would definitely have it in the computer to print it out if you didn't have one at home to look at. Because it's also being, as you said, you know, prescribed to I'm going to call it an older generation, a generation that could be our parents or our parents' friends. And a lot of those don't have computers or anything.
And they don't have access because of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think that everything is online, and probably as younger adults and children, that they're exposed to everything being online, computers, everything. But when you get older and you're living on Social Security and Medicare, when you can't sign up for having a computer and all these things and cable and all of this, the first thing that goes is your access to information that you may find online. So as citizens get older, they have to drive if they still can, and they have to get to their pharmacist. They have to talk to people who will get this information for themselves, and or their children need to be aware of this and get the information for their parents and become advocates for their parents and grandparents.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And it's not where you have to wait to be an advocate. You don't have to wait until it happens. You can establish it now, you know, within your own family. Or if you don't have a family, your extended family with your friends.
Well, one of the things is my mother years ago used to help out at the senior center, and she would serve food to elder senior citizens. She would help them with different things. She would go down and play cards down there. She'd play bridge and pinochle and different kinds of games and did all kinds of things and loved the senior center as she got, you know, started to be in her 60s and 70s and 80s. And one of the things that she noted among senior citizens was that they were always talking about their illnesses and all the pills they were taking.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom used to kind of, she would just look at them and she'd say, well, you know, I'm not taking anything. I feel great. And they'd sort of look at her, but my mom thought that these seniors were being over-medicated in some cases.
Right, and in many times they could definitely be over-medicated. Hear our music, Rosalind. I want to thank you for being our special guest this week on our show on Levaquin and the effects of Cipro. Thank you again, and look forward to our next show with you.
Yes, and thank you for having me as your guest.
You're welcome. And to all those countries out there that listen to us, even if you're the only one out there, thank you for listening to us. And I hope this is all helping everyone, our shows. God bless to everybody.